Okay, we are hold up.
Oh my gosh.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
All right, so we are holding by the Mishnah on Kuf Lamed Gimel Lamed Bet. We learned in the last couple of Mishnayos about the details of how a person can disinherit some of his children or prefer some of his children over others, give them a larger inheritance or whatever. So now continuing on that topic, you can do it, but should you do it? The Mishnah says, a kosev is nechos of lachayim, if somebody writes away his nechosim to somebody else, and he abandoned his children, he set aside his children, masha also asui, okay, what's done is done, it is valid, as we said in previous Mishnayos. Ella, however, the Chachamim are not pleased with him. Ein ruach Chachamim noy chaymenu means the Rashbam says, and this is in other places, like in Pirkei Avos, it means the Chachamim have no nachas ruach from him. Instead of a person should be causing nachas ruach for the Chachamim, this person is causing the Chachamim to be angry with him. Now, why? There's a few different reasons why the Rashbam says. One, the Rashbam says, gives one reason, because after all, the Torah says that there's supposed to be Yerusha, it's supposed to be to all the children. Who are you to override that? There's a couple of other reasons that the Shoinim talk about. Another one is because then you're going to cause jealousy and friction among the children. Look what happened to Yaakov favoring Yosef and all the developments from that. And another reason that's given is because you never know. Okay, this child is a bad one. What if he ends up having good children? You're going to take it.
Well,
why should it be? What if he himself does tshuva? Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was a different thing. That was he didn't want to have children at all, but yeah, okay. There is, by the way, there is some discussion among the Rishonim about, for example, Mishnah said the Iniyach Hasbana, that he abandoned his children. What about if he gave them something and then gave away the rest? Is that valid? So it's not the best thing to do, but some of the Rishonim say that's at least not so bad. The Yerushalmi actually has a sharp expression about this kind of thing. Somebody who writes away his nechassim, who gives away his nechassim, and doesn't give any to his children. The Yerushalmi has a sharp expression about it, quoting a passage from Yechezkel, such a person, his averus are on his bones.
Woo.
In other words, his averus even, you know, go with him into the grave.
That's only for all the children?
No, I mean any one individual child, yeah. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I mean, why are you born of Noeg and Kashur? Reb Shimon Gamliel says if his children are not acting properly, Zachor Latov, then he should be remembered for good. In other words, it is a good thing. There is a girsa that a number of the Rishonim have, and it's also brought in Shulchan Aruch, not Noeg and Kashur, that it's the question whether they're acting properly, but Noeg and Boy Kashur, whether they treat him properly. In other words, according to the girsa we have in front of us, it's just a question, are they keeping mitzvahs or not? No, you can boy kashura would be, it's not even a question of they're keeping mitzvahs, are they being chutzpahdik to him? Are they not treating him with derech eretz like they should? Okay.
And therefore?
Well, therefore, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, zachor lato. So the question in the Gemara is, he boy. No, it's not a stira. One is, are they keeping mitzvahs or not? The other one is, maybe they're keeping mitzvahs, but they're not treating their father with derech eretz.
No, because from here, we said previously,
the question is, we have a question. Are the Rabbanan and the Mishnah disagreeing with Reb Shimon Gamliel or not? Are they saying as a blanket statement, don't ever take the Nachla away from the children, regardless whether they're acting properly or not, in which case they're arguing with him? Or maybe not. Maybe the Chachamim are saying, in general, it's not a good thing to do, without a good reason. Except Reb Shimon Gamliel says, if you have a good reason, because they're not Noegim Kashura, then Zachalotah. Toshma, come, we'll bring a proof from a case history that happened. The Yosef ben Ya'ezer, this is the famous Yosef ben Ya'ezer that we had in last week's Pirkei Avos, the first one of the Zugos. Hoyle ben Shalahay Noy Kashura. He had a son who was not acting properly, or according to the other Girsa, who wasn't treating him with Derech Eretz, whatever. Havale Elisa Bedinri. Now, Yosef ben Ya'ezer had an Elisa of gold coins. Tosfos points out, Elisa sometimes means an attic, or like a second story of his house, full of gold coins. Tosfos says that on the basis of what we're going to have later in the story involving 13 of them. It doesn't seem logical, but that's what it means over here. Therefore, Tosfos says that what Elisa over here means a keli. Olas, Elis, whatever, means like a ladle or something. So he had a ladle or a jar, whatever, full of gold coins. Well, he didn't want it to go to his son, since he wasn't Noy Kashura. So he went and was makdash it to the Beis Mikdash. eventually the son, Azal Nosif Bas Godo Kluli Diane Malka, eventually the son went and married the daughter of the person who wove crowns, wreaths, for Yanai HaMelech. So Yosef Ben Yezer lived in the time, he lived in the time during and around the Nes Chanukah. So at some point after that, the Chashmonaim took power and they were the kings. So his son now married this person married the daughter of this person whose job is to weave crowns or wreaths or whatever for Yanai. His wife had a baby. Zovin Lobinisa, and so she needed extra food now that she gave birth. So the son of Yosef Ben Yezer, her husband, bought her a fish. Kara, when he opened it up, Ashkach Vamagalisa, he found a jewel in it, like the story with Yosef Moshe Shabbat. Omrulay, so his wife tells him, Loy Timti Yelamalka, don't bring this jewel to the palace. Even though my father works making crowns for the king, and they could always use a precious stone like this for the king's crown, don't go bring it to them to sell. The Shakli Laminach Bidomi Kalili, because they'll end up buying it from you for a very cheap price. They'll drive down the price. So they're not necessarily such honest people. They won't pay you the full value of it. Zil Amti Lagabi Gizbri. Instead, what you should do, she tells him, is go bring it to the Gizbar, to the treasurer of the Beit Hamikdash, who can use it for the stones of the ephod, or actually the choshen, whatever. Every so often you'd have the stones might fall out or break or whatever, and they'd need new ones. We also know the famous story of Donovan Nisina, for example. I'm not real sure, actually. I mean, the story of Donovan Nisina knew that the chachamim came to him to buy precious jewels for the choshen, and his father was asleep, etc. Yeah, you know, yeah. Come on, it's one of those stories we all hear when we're 3 and 4 years old, you know. Anyway. Here the Rashbam is saying that the Gizbarim can use it for the Ephod and the Choshen. I'm not real sure why he needs to say that. I mean, why don't we just say they could use it they could use anything else that you bring to Hektish that they could sell it and use the value of it. I don't know. Yeah, but that's the point. Yeah, okay. What? No, if he's giving it to them, I guess that's the point. Because we're going to say that they're going to be giving them value of it. Right, okay, fair enough. Anyway. So go bring it to the Gizbarim, they'll give you the fair value for it. However, she also tells him, don't you estimate a price for it. Don't start by saying, I'm willing to sell it to you for X amount. Because what if you undervalue it? The problem is, then you're going to be stuck with your initial offer, because when you say something with a hediyot, he's only koine when Mesira or Meshicha or what have you is done. With Hektish, Amirosa, you're saying it is enough to create an obligation. Actually, the ritva brings from the Ri Balatosis, not necessarily. She may not have been so familiar with the halacha, because he argues that no, I mean it is true. It is taka halacha. Amirosa legavur kamisirosa lehediyah, but that wouldn't necessarily apply in this case, where you're just doing it as the opening thing in a bargaining session. So therefore, maybe she wasn't quite correct in the halacha. On the other hand, the Ritva himself brings, and Tosfos also brings over here, that she may have been correct after all. There may be a difference between when you're saying I'm going to give something to Hektish versus when you're saying that I'm going to be saying something which you're not actually giving yet something to Hektish versus in this case where you're offering to give or sell the diamond to Hektish. Then in fact, Amir Asa L'Gavoya, Kim Yisud Asa L'Hedya, may taka be in effect, and indeed that Amman Paskin that way, that if you go to Hektish and tell that, as in the story over here, it's considered a netter, basically, yes. So therefore, if you were to tell them that you're willing to sell it for X amount, then that's it. You're going to be held to that, even if it's worth more than that.
Right.
Okay.
She could have done all that because her father is this job of making the crowns.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean she deals on a regular basis with Hektish. Maybe. Okay. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Elo the Shaimua Inu. So she tells him, make sure that they're the ones who make the first offer. And then you can go from there. Amtie, so he brought it to them. Shamua Betlesra Ilyasa de Dinri. And they evaluated it as being worth 13 Ilyasa of gold coins. Again, this is what brings Tosfos to say, that Ilyasa can't really mean addicts full of gold coins, because that would be a huge amount. That would be a guzma. You have to say, therefore, that it means containers full of gold coins.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a lot of money.
Yeah. No, but Tosfos says the fact that 13 a lot of times is a number that's used in the Gemara to mean a guzma, but since we're going to break it down, 7 and 6, that implies that it is actually a precise number over here. Okay. Amrile, however, the Gizbarim told him, the problem is Sheva Ikashit Laka. We have 7 of these containers full of gold coins available in the treasury of the Beth Mikdash right now, but we don't have the other 6. Are you still willing to sell it? Amalahu, he says,
it's going to be paid later? Is that the meaning?
Is that, or what do you want to do about it? What do you want to do about that? What do you want
to do about that?
Amalahu, so he tells them, Sheva Havuli, fine, give me the 7. Sheesh, and as far as the other 6, Harein Mokdash is Hashemayim, I'm giving them away as heads.
Wow.
Wait. Omdu Vakosu, so they went ahead and wrote down in their account books, Yosef ben Ye'ezer hichnis achas, ubnoi hichnis sheish. Yosef ben Ye'ezer, the father, brought in 1 container of gold coins to Hekdash, and his son brought in 6. The Rashbam says they wrote it down in their account books, because they had to keep their accounts.
Why did they do it this way?
Because they had to keep account of how much came in and how much go out.
He gave,
but they had to write down. So they wrote down in his favor that look how much better he is than his father. His father was only able to be Makdash 1, and he's Makdash 6. Wait, we're going to give another version of it in a second, but I'll just tell you, the Rashba in one of his Truvas and the Ritva here on the Gemara say that actually there's a different meaning of it. They didn't write it down just to keep the account, just to balance their books. They wrote it down like you're Mepharsim. When somebody does a mitzvah, it's appropriate to be mature. It's appropriate to publicize it, that other people, like you see, plaques that put on shawls, and you honor somebody by the dinner and whatever. The Ikadam, however, another version is they wrote down, on the contrary, not in his favor. Yosef ben Ye'ezer hichnis achas ubnoi hoti sheva. On the contrary, Yosef ben Ye'ezer brought in 1 container of gold coins for this mitzvah, and his son took out 7. Okay. Meaning, according to the second version, they're saying he didn't do such a good thing. He shouldn't have emptied out the treasury of the Beth Mikdash. If they tell him there's only 7 available, he should have said, fine, I'll take 5, I'll take 6, or whatever. He's acting like, and if there had been the whole 13, he would have taken the whole 13. He would have left the treasury empty. So, okay, he's being Makdash 6, blessed greater, because he's not going to have them eventually pay him off. But yeah. So, Mid Ka'amri Hichnis, now, according to the first version, since they're saying that he brought in 6 compared to his father who brought only 1, Miklal b'shafir avad. That seems to imply that Yosef ben Ye'ezer did good by not giving him the Yerusha in the first place. Because in other words, what they write, when these Gizbarim, when they write it down, it's not just they're not stopping writing down and balancing the books like accountants do. They're writing it down under the guidance of the Chachmei Adur, under the guidance of Sanhedrin or whoever. So therefore, if they're writing that down, that means that they're saying, retrospectively, it turns out the father did good by not giving him the Yerusha, meaning we would be saying, therefore, now we shouldn't assume that he's going only according to a Daf Yachid of Shimon Gamliel. It's more logical, according to that, to assume that the Rabbanan in the Mishnah would agree with that. And they would say, in other words, if he's not knowing Kashura, as was the case over here, then Zohar Latoy. And therefore, they're writing down in Yosef and Yezah and his son's favor that he did good by not giving the Yerusha to his son. And in the end, the Eibishter worked it out that his son ended up giving even more than he did. Yes. Implying, therefore, that even the Rabbanon would accept that.
He made him holy.
Yes. On the other hand, Adraba, you could argue the other way around. Midka Amri Hotzi, but the second version says that Fakeus, they wrote it down as a gnai to the son, that he took out 7, recalled the live shopper of it. From that, you could learn that maybe he didn't do so good. Mm-hmm. In other words, maybe Fakeus, you would say that the Rabbanon do disagree with Reb Shimon Gamliel. They say even if the son is not Noyeg Kashuri, you still shouldn't take away the inheritance from him. Therefore, what happened? Yosef ben Ye'ezer did wrong by not giving him the Yerusha. And Min HaShemayim, it turned out that in fact, more wrong came out of that, that his son wound up taking away everything that the Hekdash had available right now. Because if we're saying according to the Rabbanon that you're not supposed to do that you're not supposed to take it away from a son, even if he's not married to Shura. It means his Hichnis Achas itself was no good. And Hichnis Achas in a way that was improper, and the Galgalim Choyval Yidechaya, that it wound up, that his son wound up later on taking out 7 from Hekdash.
Not only he took out the 1 that he put in, but he took out 6 more. Can you take it out?
Well, he did, right? Because he was selling them the jewel. Elam halakha mishma. You know, okay. So the bottom line is you can't learn from it one way or the other. Obviously, the two versions of the story are taka arguing on this very point, whether that Rabbanan and our Mishnah agree with Reb Shimon and Gamliel or whether they disagree. You can't prove anything because you have two versions of the story. My havi Allah, fine. What's the bottom line? What is the halacha? Or what do we say? What would the Tanakhama hold? Toshma, the Amale Shmuel of Yehuda. We find that Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda, Shinina, Shinina, the smart one, sharp one, the one with big teeth. We've talked about a number of times before what the word Shinina means. Loi tehevi be'aburi achsamta. You should not be involved in a case where the father is taking away the nachla from his sons or from his legitimate heirs. Even from a bad son to a good son, and how much more so that you shouldn't be if the guy wants to disinherit all his sons and give it to his daughter. So therefore, the point of the matter is that it has to be therefore that the Rabbanan and our Mishnah are disagreeing with the Shem Gamliel. Otherwise, if they agree, then who is Shmuel talking according to? We can't say the blanket statement, don't ever be involved, because the Chachamim, if we said that way, we'd say the Chachamim do agree that if he's not knowing Kashura, that you shouldn't. There is, by the way, an interesting thing. The Maharam Sheikh talks about in one of his Chovas, or Moshe Feinstein talks about in one of his, that maybe, though, after all said and done, maybe the Noegim Kashura and not that we're talking about over here is, let's say, somebody, okay, he's careless with certain mitzvahs or whatever, or according to the Givus of Noegim Boy Kashura, that they're careless in the Kibbutz Avraham. They want to say, though, that if we're talking about a person who's completely Perek Oil, a person who completely went off the Derech, then maybe it is proper to withhold the Yerusha from them, because... At least according to the possibility that he's going to have children who are going to be good, not very likely, they say. I mean, maybe, I don't know if afterwards with the Baal Teshuva movement it's different, but, I mean, Ramosha Feinstein lived to see that, and I don't think he changed his mind on that, but at least there is at least that position among the Acharim.
Okay.
If this child is completely not shown the Torah mitzvah, then it is legitimate to be involved in a case involving disinheriting him. Okay. Practically speaking, though, I don't know. I mean, in Shulchan Aruch it says the bottom line, you shouldn't. And actually, the interesting thing that Amos says, if somebody before he dies says, I want you to use my nechasim for the best possible purpose, then you give it to his children. The best possible purpose is to give it to them.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Okay. Turn it up.
My now you understand the meaning. Is there a shia tamei al b'chokei?
Okay, I'm not seeing the relevance.
I have to go through all this.
Okay. Yes. All right. Turn it up. It happened once that there was a person whose sons weren't acting properly. So he went and wrote out that his nechasim should go to Yonasan ben Uzziel. There's two major approaches that the Rishonim have to this whole story over here. Is it he wrote it to Yonasan ben Uzziel, figuring that then with the intention that the children shouldn't get it, but still he didn't explicitly say so, or was it more a matter of that he was doing it because as sort of like a neder that he didn't want his children to have enough?
As long as his name was in the Uzziel, it makes sense.
Huh?
Yeah, that's a bad Uzziel.
Okay.
The guy is Uzziel. That's the father again.
Yeah. So, okay.
Well, because that's his son anyway.
Okay, okay. Oh, well, okay. The truth is, Tosfos actually brings from the Yerushalmi in the Dorim that it was Yonasan ben Uzziel's own father who made a neder that he's not allowed to have hanah from his nefasim. And Tosfos says maybe that's a different variation of the story that we have over here. Anyway, okay. Ma also Yonasan ben Uzziel. So what did Yonasan ben Uzziel do about it? Machashlish, he sold one third of it. For himself to use the money. The Hikdish Shlish, he was Makdish one third of it to the Beit HaMikdash. The Hechzel, the Bon of Shlish, and then he returned one third to the children. So the Rashbam says the reason why he did that was because he wanted to demonstrate that it is completely his. It's his to dispose of as he wishes. So therefore, he first did the Machar Shlish, the Hikdish Shlish, to show that he has full right to do whatever he wants with it. And then once he has that, then he has the ability also to return some of it to the children.
Can just return everything?
Yeah. Yeah.
He
didn't explicitly say it tonight. That's the thing. Yeah. Tosfos gives a different expression, a different understanding of it, that this person had made a neder, that his children are not going to have hana from him while he's alive or after he's dead. However, Yonas and Benoziel figures that he has the right, now that it's my own nechosim, I have the right to do with it what I want.
So he had to use part of it.
So he had, right. Yeah.
That's so nice. Okay.
Baal of Shammai b'makle v'tamila. So Shammai came to argue with Yonas and Benoziel with his stick and with his bag, meaning he came ready to argue it. The Ramah says, actually, the Yad Ramah says on a divorce that he brought along a stick like to threaten him and his bag to collect the money and take it back. And take it back. Omale, yeah. So Yonas and Benoziel tells him, Shammai. If you're able to take back what I sold and what I was makdish, after yochalahotzi mashechzarti, fine. Then you have a legitimate reason to say that you also have to take back the part that I gave to the children, that they can't have it. In other words, Shammai is taking the view, again, according to the Rashbam, what it is Shammai is taking the view that this guy was basically masked you his nechassim, having in mind that his children shouldn't have hana from him. Mitzvah kaim divra mes, mitzvah to follow what the mes did. So therefore, so he's coming and arguing how tough, and you're returning it to the children. You're returning any of it to the children.
He was implying, in other words.
But it wasn't explicitly said. So it wasn't explicitly said, but it was implicit. So Yonas and Benaziel tells him, look, you could, I see you not arguing on the hektish and on the mechira, implying that to that extent you consider it completely mine. Fine, in that case, then to the extent of giving it to the children also it's completely mine. Yeah, but the fact is, in other words, he's saying that we're going to see in a minute that Shammai himself was actually making a mistake. Hold on. So Shammai thought that once you were over on the divra, on the words of the mess, the matana is not a matana, and the hektish is not a hektish, but he's not arguing on the machal shlish and the hektish shlish. So therefore, Yonis and Benaziel tells him that if you can find legitimate grounds to take back the hektish and the mechira, fine, then I'll agree that you also have legitimate grounds to take back the mechira. But you don't. You yourself agree that the hektish and the mechira is valid. Imlav, and if not, yati yochaloyti mashech zarti. If you have no legitimate argument against the mechira or against the hektish, because after all, he didn't say any tnai that I can't be makdish or I can't sell. So therefore, then you can't take back what I said either, because after all, he didn't explicitly say anything. That's according to that explanation. According to the explanation that we're talking about, that the father had made a neder; he didn't want his children to have hana from him, b'chayav or moisav. So fakech, what it is Shammai thought that why is this guy giving it to Yonason? Is because he wanted to use Yonason as a proxy. He wanted to use Yonason and Benaziel as a proxy. He will give all of it to the children, and that way they won't have hana from the father, the chayav or moisav. Yonason and Benaziel will be the go-between. And Yonas and Benaziel answers him that because it was given as a matana gemura to me, then I have the right to dispose of part of it however I want. Omar, so Shammai says, you know what? He got me. He tiach alai Benaziel. Benaziel threw it at me. He tiach alai, the Rashbam says, like the expression, he tiach dvorim tzvapim ma'ila. To talk with a little bit of chutzpah to somebody. So Shammai is saying, like in a joking way, look at that. Look, you know, Benaziel really got me there. Okay, so the question is meikra maisov. So what was Shammai thinking? What was the basis of his objection in the first place? The Rashbam brings another girsa, and he says that some of the Mephoroshim say that the question is actually on Yonason, Benaziel. What was he thinking that he sold and gave hektish rather than giving it all back to the children? That fits better with Tosfos' understanding of the story. Anyway, the reason is Mishum Maisid Beis Chorin. The reason is either, again, what Shammai misunderstood, that it should be the halacha this way, or what Yonas and Benaziel based himself on, that he should be makdish and sell part of it first, was based on the story of Beis Chorin. It's not. We learn in a Mishnah in Nedarim. It happened in Beit Choron, a city in Eretz Yisrael, that there was a person whose father was under a neder of having hanah from him. So either the father had made a neder not to have hanah from his son, or the son had made a neder not to let his father have hanah from him, whatever. Now the son is going to be marrying off his own son, and he wanted his father, the Chasam Zayda, to be able to be there by the wedding. Well, what can he do? Neither one of them wants to be matir neder, so... So he says to somebody else, here I'm giving you the chotzer where the wedding is going to take place and the suda are all given to you as a present. The einam lefanecha, but the only purpose that I'm giving it to you, the only purpose that I'm giving it to you for is only in order that my father should be able to come and eat with us by the suda. The Rashbam brings actually from the Gemara in the Dorim over there in that Sugya that says he doesn't even have to explicitly say that the only reason I'm giving it is for my father to come. Even if he just says I'm giving it to you as a matana so that my father can come, that amounts to the same thing. It means that he's only doing it for that purpose. Well, Omaloi, so the other guy says to him, Imshali Hain, you know what, if the Chotzer and the Soda are mine, Harein Mokdosh and Lashemayim, then I want to donate them to Hekdesh. Amaloi, so the son, the father of the chosin says, Loina Sati Lachas Shalish Takdishim Lashamahim. I didn't give you my chosin and my sluda that you should be makdish them. Amaloi, so the other guy answers him back. In that case, what are you trying to make me a tax poll over here? Amaloi, Loina Sati Li Ella Eschocha. In that case, what are you telling me? You only gave me your thing, Ella Shatei Ata Rabicha Urchlan Vashoisin Omerathan Zelzeh. You just want to use me as a go between so that you and your father can be eating and drinking and making up with each other. And then the Aveda is going to be on my head because I'm the one who's making the Aveda able to happen. But you guys are Mudahana, and like this, you're using me as a cat's paw over there to make the Aveda happen. I don't want that. Amru Chachamim, and the Chachamim said, indeed, kol matana she'ena she'mekdisha mukdeshes, any matana which is not of the kind that if you want to be makdish it, you're able to be makdish it, ena matana, it's not a valid matana.
What about a
lulav and esther? Tosfos brings up that point. We're going to actually talk about it in a couple of days in the Gemara, because when we get to the topic of matana, I'm not lulav. So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. First of all, you could be makdish it as long as you have it. Afterwards, though, eventually you're going to have to return it to the guy. But
you really have to think twice before you give it.
The Meiri actually adds to it. What it would mean is, fine, I give you my load of an esther as a matana amanas lahakta the first day of Sukkot. Fine, you can be makdish it. Doesn't mean though that you're not going to have you're going to have to then go to the gizborim and be toyed it before you give it back to me. You're still responsible. That's one answer. Tosfos Then Tosfos gives another answer, is that over here, the fact of the matter is, you only gave it to him amanas sheyochel aviv. It's basically you're only doing it as haroma. You're only doing it in order to play a trick. So therefore, that kind of thing is not a valid matana. As opposed to by a lulav and esther, when you are actually giving it to him, he does have the full ability to use it until he returns it to you.
It's
a matana for the time being. It's still considered his nechassim for the time being. What? No. If it was she'ela, you couldn't work on the first day of it. It has to be l'chaftam l'chem. So again, how we understand that depends on the two different understandings of the Rashbam versus Tosfos in what was going on over here. Either it's that Shammai figured that this was a case like matnas beis chorin, that it was just in that case then you don't have the right to be makdishit, and you don't have the right to give any of it back because you don't have the right to do anything if you end up returning some of it to the children, because the guy only gave it to you amanas that it's not going to end up going to his children, therefore your hekdesh is not hekdesh at all. And Yonis and Menazil tells him it's not the same kind of thing, because in that case he explicitly said I'm giving you the chotzer and the suda so that my father can eat here, and here the guy didn't say anything. Yes, it was implied that he's doing it for that reason, but he didn't say so in so many words. According to Tosfos, what it rather is matnas beis chorin doesn't work because the whole thing is a harama. The whole thing is only to play a trick. Over here, Over here, Fakhev, Yonis and Benazil, by being makdish part of it and giving and selling part of it, he demonstrates that it's not a trick. That it's not like in that case where when the guy says, I'm giving the chaser to Hekdish, the other guy protests and says, I didn't give it to you for Hekdish. Here, Yonis and Benazil is showing that I have the right to be makdish part of it because it's not like that story, and therefore that shows that I have full right to do everything with it, including therefore, so you expected Shammai that I'm gonna give all of it back to the children, but if I did that, then it would be matnas beis chorin. It would be an invalid matana in the first place. Then I'll have been like that. I'll have been a go between. Because then you can't be if the father made a neder that its children are not going to have hanah from him, and I, Yonis and Menazil, I'm just going to be the go between without any of it actually being sold or mukdish or whatever. If I don't have the right to do that, then it's exactly like matnas beis chorin. So to avoid that, therefore, I sold some of it and I gave some of it to Hekdish in order to make it not like matnas beis chorin. That's Tosfos' understanding.
So if this guy in the party would have invited his own guest, then maybe it would have worked.
But maybe.
Children and not even with part of it.
Doesn't matter. If there's a neder, if the father makes a neder, the children can't have enough from him, then that's it. That neder is found.
Right.
Yeah. So like this, according to Tosfos' understanding, Yonis and Menazil had to sell and give away part of it in order to prevent it from being matnas beis chorin, in order to make it that retroactively it was a legitimate matana to him, and once it's a legitimate matana to him, then fine. Some of it can end up going back to the children without it violating the neder.
This is the halacha that it can always be able to be...
The halacha is that a matana has to be able to be muktish in order for it to be a valid matana. Again, Tosfos is dealing with the question how that fits with the din of matana. I'm not faster, but Tosfos' second answer is, which most of the other Rishonim also accept, is that... over here, you only had one thing that you could do with it, namely to invite the father to the wedding, whereas by a regular matana manasahak, like a lulav or whatever, conceivably you could use it for other purposes as long as you return it intact to the other guy. So, since we talked about Yonis and Benazil, let's learn a little bit about him. Tanan Abanan, Shmoinim Talmidim Hoyla Lehil HaZakin. Hil HaZakin had 80 Talmidim. Shloshim Hem Goyim Shetishale and Shtinah Kamoshabe. 30 of them were roy that the Shechina should rest on them like it did on Moshe Rabbeinu, except that Hashem says that the generation wasn't suitable for it, and therefore it didn't happen. Another 30 were worthy of having the sun stand still for them like Yeshua. Now, the Hashem points out, the sun actually stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu also. The reason why we're mentioning Yom Yeshua is because these Talmidim were on a lesser level. They weren't on the level of Moshe, so therefore we mention Yeshua. There's other explanations as well. The Aruch HaNer has a long explanation. This Gemara is also in Sukkah. He has a long explanation over there, the gist of which is that for Moshe Rabbeinu it stopped because the Eibishter did it on his own. With Yeshua it stopped because he told it to stop. By Moshe Rabbeinu, by the battle with Sichon. By the battle with Sichon. But there, Moshe didn't have to ask for it. The Eibishter made it happen by itself. Whereas by Yeshua he had to ask for it. That's the milo of these people, that they can ask for it and it happens. And Marsha says over here a whole different thing, that it's representing the idea, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, the famous thing, Pnei Moshe, Kipnei Chama, Pnei Moshe, Kipnei Yeshua, Kipnei Levana, that Moshe's face is like the sun, Yeshua's face is like the moon. We're saying over here, Shatama Bam Chama Ki Yeshua, as if to say these people are on the level where they're worthy of receiving, they're not on the level like Moshe Rabbeinu where they're going to be equal to their Rebbe, but they're on the next level. They're able to be like Yeshua was to Moshe, the next level compared to him. Eshrim Beinanim, and then you had the other 20 were average. Who are the Gadol Shebekol and Yonis and Menazil? The greatest of them was Yonis and Menazil. Most of them, of course, should say of them means of all 80 of them. The Rebbe Negershim says it means of the 20 Beinanim. Kodin Shabakulan Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, and the least of all of them was Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai.
Was he the youngest too?
Not necessarily. He may have been the youngest, I don't know, but not necessarily. He was the least in knowledge and whatever.
Then how is he so famous? I always wonder that.
So there's a vort that the Sfasemis brings, and it's actually, you know, in this week's Pirkei Avos, we said Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, Kibbul Mehillul Meshamai. We don't say Yonis and Benazio, Kibbul Mehillul Meshamai. So the Sfasemis says a vort. I've also seen something. There's also, the Rebbe develops this idea in a Sicha, that because Yonis and Benazio was so great, as we're going to learn in the Gemara soon about the bird flying over his head getting burnt up, he was beyond the Gdorim of the world. The world can't, he can't be the Mekabel HaTorah for the next generation, because he's too great for the world to be able to be Mekabel from him. Whereas Yonis and Nazir was on the level within the world, so that to be able to work within, Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, I mean, was able to work within the world. Yeah. Okay. Amru all of Rabbi. Amru all of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So they said about Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Shalahiniach, that he did not leave unlearned Mikra, the Tanakh, or Mishnah, Gemara. Gemara doesn't mean what we have. Talmud probably should really be whatever. Not obviously not the Gemara that we have in front of us, but the analysis of the analysis of the Mishnayos and the analysis of the Masera and Lo Shonu Lo. The Mishnah is not is only talking in this case, but in a different case the din would be different, etc. That's Gemara.
Yeah, that orally.
They had that orally, yeah. Halachas, halachas like halachas of Mishnayos. And Agadza, actually, the Rashbam says it means, for example, the Midrashim on the Pesukim, like Medrash Tanchuma, and then the Midrash the Medrash Rabbah. That's Agadza. Dikdukei Torah, the details of the Torah. For example, the Rashbam says how sometimes we learn a din from one extra letter in a Pesuk. So that's Dikdukei Torah. The Dikdukei Sofrim, the details of the Sofrim. For example, the Gzeiris of the Chachamim made. The Kalan v'Chamorin, the Kalvachomers. Ugzeres Shavas and Ugzeres Shavas, or Tkufos, the Tkufos, the Rashbam says it means how to calculate the molar of the moon. The Marsha points out that Tkufos usually means also usually means instead the path of the sun, the seasons, the times when the various planets appear or whatever. The Gematrios and then Gematrius, which also includes not just Gematria, but also actually the Rashbam says it also includes things like Netrikon, like things where we darshan a word as being an acronym, like Anochi, Anonafshik Sovis Yahavir, is an example of such a thing. Or Mesholis Kosim, and the Mesholim that involve or that was said by laundrymen, where sometimes these Mesholim help you understand the Torah better. Or they help you learn a lesson in avodah or whatever. Or mesholos shualim and the mesholim involving foxes. We'll learn in Sanhedrin in a few months. That's the shame that Rameo knew 300 mesholim involving foxes that he'd used to illustrate points in Torah or points in Musar or in avodah or whatever. Yeah. Sichas Shadim, the speech of the Shadim, meaning the Rashbam says to know how to put them under an oath. So that, for example, you can write an appropriate kameya for somebody who's being attacked by a Shade. The Sichas Dekolim, and the conversation of the speech of palm trees. So that the Rashbam, the Rashbam says it doesn't mean the speech of the palm trees themselves. It means what people talk about palm trees, meaning like all the scientific information. In other words, about agriculture and palm trees. There are other explanations. There is an expert, Rabbi Goin brings an interesting thing that he knew of somebody in his time, brings that in their time, they knew of somebody in their time who had the ability, when it's a still day, there's no wind, and therefore the trees are not moving around just because of the wind, he would know how to listen out for the little movements of the trees and be able to deduce from it what's going to happen in the future. He could understand how they're actually speaking to each other with their branches moving a little bit or whatever. So that's according to that, that's Sichas Kol. The Sichas Malachi Asharis and the speech of the Malachi Asharis, again, that Rashbam says to know how to be mashviya them, to know how to put them under an oath so that you can have them accomplish what you need. The Dava Gadol, the Dava Katan, as well as Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai knew the big things and the small things. Dava Gadol was Maisim Erkava. The Dava Katan is Havaya Sabaya Verov. Havaya Sabaya Verov is basically is the skeleton of our Gemara. We call it Havayas Abaya Verava, even though there were Chachamim before and after them as well, because they're the ones in their times that really became a big thing to point out contradictions between the Mishnayos and Braises, and for them that's the basis of the Gemara. So therefore, it's called Havayas Abaya Verava. Rashi, by the way, points out in Sukkah over there that Havayas Abaya Verava. They live 300-400 years after Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. How is he dealing with their issues? He says these same issues already were known in Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai's time. But then they were forgotten, and Abaye and Rava had to start with them all over again.
Who says that?
The Rashi says it over there in Sukkah.
In Sukkah.
Is it
here in Sukkah that they?
No, I mean this Gemara. This Gemara is also in Sukkah. But that's okay.
Oh, beautiful.
The Ritva says an interesting thing. So there's a lot of different. We have to ask. I mean, how could Abaye Sabaye Rava be called a Dover Cotton? There's a couple of interesting things on it. The Ritva says, of course, it's not a double cotton compared to the Chochmas of the Goyim. There's no question it's a double gadol compared to them. But when you get down to it, why did Abaye and Rava have to have all their havayas, all their analyses and questions and answers and all? Because they didn't fully understand what the Mishnah said. If they were on the level of the Tanoim, they would have fully understood it. They wouldn't have needed all this give and take. Therefore, it can be called davar katan, especially relative to Ma'aseh Merkava.
Can you say that you knew all Gemara? Why are we asking?
Because the thing specifically was not just no. That's what we said before. Is Gemara is things like the you. Sometimes the Gemara just starts to summon the Gemara. We'll start off like the Rashbam said before, what was the lashon, loishanu elavis, all that. So you don't need a whole question and answer. You don't need a whole detailed analysis to get to that point. It's something bal peh that went along with the Mishnah that they knew that the Mishnah is only talking about in one specific case. Habayi v'rava are the kinds of things, or the whole shock of Italia that goes into it. That's called the Javakot. Anyway, so that's what the Ritva says. It's called Javakot because the fact is, if they had been on the level of the Tanoim, then they wouldn't have needed all that give and take and all that shock of Italia, and therefore it can be called double cotton relative to that.
Maybe they did it to give it to generations instead of...
Okay, but the point is, they themselves still needed to ask these questions and answer them and slug up each other and all that. There's a lot of other interesting things on it, including a few. The Baal Shem Tov has a vort on it, Kesser Shem Tov, that what it means is, if you learn Havayas Dabai Vidova just because it's interesting and you want to fatifzich in it or whatever, you know, then it's Dava Kotten. But if you're learning the Torah, if you're learning Havayas Dabai Vidova in order to connect with the Edishta, to be a Merkava to the Edishta, then it's a Dava Gadol.
Why would he learn both?
So in other words, because there's different levels of learning. We're not saying that he only learned it on the level of Dava Kotten. He learned the Havayas Dabai Vidova, which in and of themselves could be a Dava Kotten, but he learned them as you would learn Ma'aseh Merkava, the Dava Gadol. That seems to be the part. In a number of places in Chassidus, it's also brought a different idea. Ma'aseh Merkava is basically the idea of a person going beyond their level, a person going beyond the level of a human being, up to the level of the Chayis HaKodesh and whatever, as opposed to Havayas Dabai Vadova, the nitty-gritty of Halacha, is Fakertis, Chochmasa Ritzonah Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Eivishter's wisdom, channeled down and brought down into the little minutiae of Halacha. Therefore, it's called Dava Kotten. It's brought in many places in Chassidus. Whatever brings it in a Maimer, actually, on this week's parasha, Ba'alois Bachotes. It's brought in a number of places in Chassidus, this idea that therefore it's called Dava Kotten, which isn't to say, in other words, Chas V'Shalom, to say it's any less important than any other part of Torah. But okay, it's Dava Kotten in the sense that the Eivishter's Chochmasa Ritzonah is coming down into these little tiny things, but that's what makes up our world.
That's the Milo of the Kaddish.
That's the Milo of the Eivishter, who can be mitzamtzem himself into the small things. Yes. L'kayim mashanema, going back to the Gemara, all of this is, it fulfills this that it says in the pasuk. L'hanchil oy havayesh, the Eivishter says to give to the ones who love me yesh, a substance, which also means shay elomas, 310 elomas, that it says in the last Mishnah in Shas, that the Eivishter is going to give every tzaddik. Why is that? Because their storehouses are full, because they fill themselves up with every possible area of Torah and Chochmah.
You see, it's the ones who love me, the Eivishter is saying.
Yes, so in other words, that's what the point is. We're saying that even Rabbi Yechim and Zaka, who's the least of all of Hillel Tamidim, even he was so full of every area of Torah and every area of Chochmah.
So then, back to the farmer, why should he give to his sons who don't love the Kadosh Baruch Hu if they don't follow the
Because Torah? Nevertheless, the Torah still said you should give them a Yerusha, and you never know, they may have children who are good or whatever. So, yeah.
But then here the Eivishter says to the ones who love.
The Eivishter says, I will give a reward in Olam Haba. We're not talking about Olam Haba and Olam Haba, two different things. Okay, so we have to ask, well then, if Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, who's the least of the Talmidim, or at least the least of the 20 Talmidim, is on such a level, Gadol Shavakulam, Alach Kamim Kamim, imagine how much the greatest one of all of them is. Amru Olav al Yonasan ben Aziel, and indeed, they said about Yonasan ben Aziel, Vishash Yoshev Oisef HaTorah, when he would sit and study Torah, called Oibsha Pereach Olav Nisra, any bird that would fly over him would get burnt up. There's the famous verse that the Rebbe brought in Sichas a number of times. The idea of here you see the difference between how a Chassid learns versus how a Misnagid learns. The Chassid learns this and is spoiled from how great Yonatan ben Aziel was, and if even a bird is misnagid to him, I'm more so I should have bittul to the Torah. Whereas the Misnagid looks at it and starts declaring, well, is Yonatan ben Aziel chayav for if the bird belongs to somebody, is he chayav for Nizikin, etc.
But how can we compare these two things? We're talking about one sakma, potato.
The Tosfos over there in Sukkah points out why is it, what's the logic that a bird should be burnt when it comes by him? Because just like the Torah was originally given with fire, Yonas and Nazir's learning was on such a level that there's the same fire of Torah is surrounding him. So therefore we're saying, so Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai learned all this stuff, but not with the level of the fire of Torah. Yonas and Nazir learned it with the level that there's the fire of Torah. Of course, you need both. You need Abba and Yira. They ask the question, by the way, okay, so if Yonas and Nazil is learning and a bird that's burnt over him, flying over him gets burnt, what about Hillel? What's the story with him? Well, the Ritva already asks it, and he brings from the Yerushalmi that as a matter of fact, by Hillel it would also happen. The difference is with Yonas and Nazil, the difference is the Yerushalmi says by Yonas and Nazil, the bird would have to be within Dalet Amos. With Hillel, it would have to be even outside Dalet Amos. On the other hand, there is a verse, there is a verse that's brought from the Kotzker that says, Fakir, the greatness of Hillel was that he was able to keep it inside him to the extent that even though he has that fire, it doesn't go and burn up the whole world. It doesn't go burn up the birds that are flying overhead.
Right, there are actually learned in the cave.
Yes.
He has an effect on the birds.
Yes. Okay. Mishnah says.
But that's the quality of our spoken, because you know, something, yeah. Otherwise the whole world would be gone.
Indeed. Mishnah says, Ha'oimah Zebni Naaman. If somebody says, this is my son, and we didn't know that this person was his son before, Naaman, then we believe it. For what purpose? We'll see in the Gemara.
Son?
Ze'achi ain't a Naaman. But if he says, this is my brother, then we don't believe him. In other words, so we have like this, it was Reuben and Shimon, for example. And Reuben comes one day with somebody who he claims is their brother Levi. Shimon is not obligated to accept that. As far as Shimon is concerned, all they have is two brothers. So each of us is going to get half in the chazan. The yitel ima b'chalkei. So what happens with this Levi? He takes within Reuben's property. So the Rashbam gives the example. Let's say, so again, the two brothers, Reuben and Shimon. Let's say there were three fields. So if it's only the two of them, each of them is going to get 1.5 fields. Let's leave aside the question of b'chorda for now. So that's a complicated thing. Let's say they have an older sister, whatever. Now Reuben comes along with this Levi and says that Levi is their brother as well. So if it really was so, if they both agreed to it, each would get one field. Like this, they don't. So instead, Reuben takes he had 1.5 fields. He takes a half a field and gives it to Levi out of his own portion, in other words. Shimon can't be forced to, because Shimon can say, I don't know who this guy is. You want to say he's your brother, then you take part of him. You divide with him, yeah. Actually, the Rabbi Gershom says that actually it means they divide it equally. That Reuben, in other words, according to that, Reuben and this Levi would each get 3/4 of a field. But the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that Reuben...
It could be in cahoots.
No, but they're in cahoots. I mean, the fact is that Reuben is giving away for it. So. Okay.
Wait, Reuben and Levi both get 3/4?
According to the Rabbi Gershom, each of them would get 3/4. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is Reuben is going to have 1, which is what he'd have if there are actually 3 children, three sons. Levi gets a half, the difference between Reuben and Shimon's claim, and Shimon gets his 1.5.
He should have stuck around, Levi.
Okay, mess. Now what happens if Levi dies without children of his own, so now his brothers are going to inherit him, Yachzur and Nechasim l'makayman. Then the Nechasim that were given to him go back to their place. In other words, then we say, for example, that half a field that Reuben gave him, Shimon can't now come and say, well, I'm his brother, I get half of that. If you're his brother, you should have given him half of your field to begin with. So therefore, I will take back that half a field that I gave him, and that's it. You're out of the picture. You keep your 1.5.
Right.
Yeah. Nafal and Nechasim and Makamacha. What happens though if this Levi ended up getting Nechasim from elsewhere, so not that weren't part of the original estate, then Yushua Chavimai, then both brothers inherit with him equally. He was murdered that he's their brother. Levi himself said, I'm the brother of all of you. Well, therefore, fine. So they're all entitled equally. Even though Shimon was denying it, fine. But that doesn't change the fact that Levi was the owner of the Nechasim, said that they belong equally to both. So the Gemara says, when we say Zebni Naaman L'mayhil, so when we say that a person can say, this is my son, and we believe him, for purposes of what halach? Amr of Yehuda Amashmul, the Yoshai, first of all, as far as Yashin him, And second of all, the lifter is ishtem and ayibum. Number two, it means that if the father was not previously known to have sons or daughters, and therefore his wife is going to be chayiv and yibum or chalitza, and now he's saying this person is my son, good, we believe him, and therefore his wife is potter from chalitza, from yibum. The question is, yoshev shita, isn't it obvious that you can say that this guy is my son for purposes of yirusha? After all, I mean, we've learned before that so what? You don't even need yirusha. You can give him atana to whoever you want. So who cares whether we believe it's a son or not? Either way, he's able to give it to him. Now, what about, though, that Ashbam and Tosfos talk about? What about, for example, okay, so let's say he says that this is my son. Then he lives another 5 years, let's say. During those 5 years, he gets more nechassim. Would we say that this person gets a share of those nechassim as well? He doesn't have a migoy on that, after all. But Ashbam says, as a matter of fact, no, he wouldn't. And Tosfos agrees.
Wow.
On the other hand, the Maharam Rutenberg disagrees with both of the Rashbam and Tosfos and says he would, and that's how the Ramah brings that as halacha and Jovanah. Okay, so anyway, so isn't it poshut that if you say this is my son, of course he can yarshin you. You have the ability to, anyway, to dispose of your property however you want.
If he was found to be a son before the finding of new property, then he would share in it?
So according to Rashbam and Tosfos, He would not.
But according to
the Ramah, he would.
But if he was discovered to be a son after the division of the property.
No, we're not talking after the division of the property. Okay, so that's a different question. If they already divided the property, that goes back to the second case of the Mishnah, where somebody shows up and says that I'm a brother. Do they both believe him? Who exactly is believing him over here? If they don't believe him, then usually he would need to bring evidence that he's a son, if he brings evidence. We had a case like that in Bavmatia. We had a case of Mori Bar Isaac over there, where a brother of his showed up and claimed part of the inheritance. We said over there, originally Rav Chisda tells the brother that you have to bring proof that you're his brother. He says, I'm afraid of Mori Bar Isaac. He's a tough guy. The Edom are scared of him. So Rav Chisda tells Mori Bar Isaac, on the contrary, then you have to bring Edom that he's not his brother. And he didn't. In the end, Edom came that he was his brother, and therefore he got a share of the Nechassim. But here we're talking about something else. Here we're talking about whether the father has a niggery to say that this person is his son, because after all, he could have just given him a matana. So the Rashbam and Tosfos say the niggery only works for what he had up until now, not for what he gets in the future. Maharam Rittenberg disagrees with that.
And there are others.
There are others, like Maharam Rittenberg. So anyway, the point is that isn't it poshut that he can say that this person is my son for purposes of Yerusha? The answer is, you're right. Lifter is ishtim and ayivim mitzvichala. You're right. That wasn't the real chiddush. We just mentioned that incidentally. The real chiddush of the Mishnah is that he can say, this is my son, to the extent that then his wife is potter from yivim. Otherwise, you would think maybe she needs chalitza. Question is, hon nami tamena. Okay, but we don't need all Mishnahs to tell us that either. We have a Mishnah explicitly to that effect in Kiddushin. Misha amar v'shachmi sota yeshli bonim neman. If somebody says right before he dies, I have sons, therefore my wife doesn't need yivim. Nemon, and we believe him, and his wife can marry. Yeshli achim ein nemon. But if he says, I have brothers, where we didn't know before that he has brothers, and therefore, in other words, he's saying, my wife is going to be chayev and yibum or chalitza with one of those brothers, ein nemon, then we don't believe him. So therefore, that Mishnah clearly tells us that if he says that I have sons, we believe him, and his wife doesn't need chalitza or yibum, what is our Mishnah adding to that? The answer is, hasam d'loy mochzak lon ba'ach. Yes, but there we're talking about that this person, there was no chazaka before he said anything, that he had sons or brothers. So therefore, she already has a chazaka of being mutter l'shuk, because, yeah, there's no sons, but there's also no brothers to do yibum with. In fact, the Rashbam says, you have a svek sveka. Maybe he has sons, and even if he has sons, and even if he doesn't have sons, he may not have any brothers either. So that's a good enough reason for her to be mutter l'shuk. To marry anybody she wants. So that's what that Mishnah is talking about. Hacha, over here, we're talking about a different case. Afagab the Mukhtik Leba Ach. We're talking about our Mishnah is, even if he already has a Chazaka, that he has brothers, and therefore, so up until he says anything, we think that, as far as we know, she's going to need Yibum and Chalitza. Nevertheless, he still is able to say Zebni and Pater her from Yibum and Chalitza. Now, the question is why? So, Omer Rabbi Yosef, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, Mipnei Ma Omru Zebni Neman, why Taka is that? That if he says Zebni, then we believe him. That his wife is part of Yibum. The reason is, Hoyol Baal Shama Gerashi is Ishti Neman. The reason is, it's based on the idea that if a husband says, I divorced my wife, we believe him. So therefore, since he could have said he has a migri, he could have said I divorced her, and she'd be part of Yibum on that basis, because once she's divorced, she doesn't need Yibum either. So once he could have said that, so therefore instead he says Yeshli Bonim, then that also works. And the reason why it works is because he could divorce her right now. The problem with that is, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Morid Avram, Rabbi Yosef says, Eibishter of Avraham. It's an expression of surprise. Toli Tanya, but Deloy Tanya. What are you making what it explicitly says in the Mishnah dependent on something that it doesn't explicitly say in a Mishnah or a Braisa anywhere? This that we're saying, a husband says, Gerashti is Ishti, is not something that's anywhere from the Tanoim. It's not correct, but it's a memory. It's a statement from Amoraim that Shmuel was saying. You're trying to explain the Mishnah. You're trying to say the reason why the Mishnah that's saying Zebni Nemon is because of that reason that's Bechal not in a Mishnah or Braisa. The Mishnah itself should have to be stating that point someplace. That if a person says Gerashi is Ishti, we believe it.
What did he say this
time? That's the question. That's the question. And the Rashbam also adds the famous thing that we know throughout Shas, that Rabbi Yosef got sick and forgot his learning, so therefore when he comes to something like this, he has to turn it over in his mind and then figure out where it comes from and how to figure out what it means. No, rather what you have to say is if it was said, then this is what was said. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mifnei Ma Omer Zebni Neman, Hoyol Uvi Yodei Lagarsha. Not because if he says Gerashti is Ishti, would believe him. Because he has the ability right now to divorce her. Therefore, on the basis of that migri, that we believe him instead when he says that this is my son. And that you don't need a Mishnah or Braisa to tell us that a husband can be Megarish's wife. That's obvious. Therefore, it's not Toli Tanya, but Deloi Tanya. It's not making our Mishnah dependent on something which was first enunciated by the Amoroi.
And he could divorce her immediately,
and therefore, if instead he says, instead of divorcing her, he says, I don't need to because I have a son, we can believe him on the basis of that. Now, Tosfos brings up the point that if he divorces her, it'll make a difference, she'll be possible to marry a Kohen. But still, that doesn't take away the Yibum. The fact of the matter is, from the point of view of passing her from Yibum, either divorcing her or saying, I have a son, would work equally well.
You think a man that divorces his wife just for...
Sure, we learned many cases in Gittin where a person does just that, and Hayom al-Achamisa, or things like that, where he wants to make sure, he knows he's childless, you know, he doesn't want his wife to be in the situation of Chalitza or Yibum, especially if the brothers live overseas, or if they're tough guys, or whatever, you know. So he would make and prevent her from that. But this way, and if the mitzvah is going to happen in a bad way, in a negative way, or whatever,
yeah. But she still has the power.
The mitzvah of chalitza used to be something that everyone would do, and then by the time of the Gemara, it's something that a lot of people try to avoid.
I don't know about that necessarily, but first of all, it's only a mitzvah once you die. So the same way as a person can give a matana before he dies and bypass the dinim of Yerusha, the same way a person can give a gift to his wife and bypass the dinim of Chalitza. Okay, bypassing a mitzvah doesn't mean that you doesn't mean anything. A person is not obligated to put himself, let alone somebody else, in a position to be able to do the mitzvah. But come, it's not enough.
Is it a mitzvah to divorce your wife?
It's not a mitzvah to divorce your wife, but if he's doing it for her benefit, so that she doesn't end up with somebody who's not going to want to do Chalitza or Yidin with her, or who's going to want to, but she doesn't want to marry him or whatever. So you know, he wants to prevent that she's not going to have to marry somebody who she doesn't like. You know, that's also true, right? Chayola, exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're to prevent her from being an aguna. But however, actually, no. Choices also talked over there about that it also helps that this way there's no problem with Yibum Chalitza.
That's a clear case. That's the difference.
Why is that a clear case? It's the same thing. They're all to battle. No, but it's not only aguna. It's also chalitza.
Sugar.
Right.
Sugar free. You don't like it.